Good day, everyone. Welcome to the Cigna Autism Awareness Series conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Ms. Kristen Martin. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you, Alan. Welcome, and thank you for calling in to Cigna's Autism Awareness Series. My name is Kristen Martin, and I'm the lead clinician for the autism team at Cigna. Due to the format of this call, you will not be able to ask questions during the teleconference. However, at the end of this conference, you will be transferred into a brief 5-question survey in which we are requesting your feedback regarding your experience in today's seminar. After this survey, you will be able to ask questions on today's presentation. A handout for today's seminar is available online at www.cigna.com/autism. Scroll to the current topic section in the middle of your page and click on today's topic labeled Augmentative and Alternative Communication. Please note that not all policies cover today's topic. For more specific information, if your policy covers topics discussed in today's seminar, please contact the autism team by calling the number on the back of your insurance card. Today, I have the pleasure of introducing Dr. Melissa Olive. Dr. Olive has her PhD and is a board-certified behavior analyst. She is the owner of Applied Behavioral Strategies in Connecticut, which offers individual program analysis and development. The practice has over 30 years combined experience in working with individuals with behavioral challenges. Dr. Olive, thank you for being here today. You are more than welcome to start your presentation.
Thank you, Kristen. And again, I just want to thank Cigna for offering these opportunities for parents and professionals. It is just an amazing thing that they make the time and put the resources into making it happen. The handouts are also available on my webpage, which is appliedbehavioralstrategies.com. And from there, you can also click over to our blog where you might find other topics of interest. So today we're going to be talking about augmentative and alternative communication, what it is, the pros and cons of different modes. Then I'm going to bring in a little bit of information about special education law and how that law applies to individuals who are under the age of 22. And then we'll move on to a little bit of research on the use of augmentative systems for individuals, and we'll follow up with how to make sure that your loved one or your student is assessed, as well as how to go about using the different forms in practice. So let's start off with, what is AAC? Well, AAC has been defined as any symbol, any aid, any strategy, any technique that's used to enhance or compensate the language and or communication for a person. So that could be, if your child uses a picture schedule, that is a symbol that helps your child better follow instructions. Or if your student uses text to communicate, that is an aid to help him or her convey their meaning. A strategy could be sign language, learning how to use sign to request. Who uses augmentative communication? Well, a lot of different people do. First, we know that individuals who have intellectual disability have often used this. Individuals who have cerebral palsy, who may not have any intellectual issue but may have a motor problem. Individuals with autism spectrum disorder also use AAC. Individuals who have apraxia or dyspraxia may also use it. And finally, an individual who has an acquired impairment, so someone who maybe had a stroke or someone who got a traumatic brain injury or a spinal cord injury, they may also need augmentative and alternative communication. So I just want to make sure that everybody understands the difference between language and communication. Communication is an act, so it's any act where you convey a meaning. So that can be pointing your finger to the dog to tell the dog to go out of the room. It could also mean waving and saying hello. Those are communicative acts. Whereas language is all of the rules that go about how to communicate. It includes putting a noun and a verb together in a sentence. It also includes knowing how close to stand to somebody when you're having a conversation. And we could spend all day on the language rules. But the most important thing to understand is Some children may never develop language, but they still may turn into very proficient communicators. I have this great client on my roster right now. He is 14, and he uses a Dynavox that is small, smaller than an iPad, and he is able to type out Chip's blue bowl. And what that really means is, he says Lay's Chip's blue bowl. And what that means is he wants regular salted Lay's potato chips, and he would like them in a bowl. He also then can request Lay's orange chips bowl, which means he wants the barbecue chips. So you can see that his language is a little different, but he is able to communicate very clearly what he wants. For modes of communication, and that means how you communicate, we have vocal. So if you interact with a baby, babies begin to vocalize by saying ba 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 or ma 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 ma. I have a sibling on the spectrum who's been with me since he was 13. He uses vocalizations to communicate as well. He says things like ka 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 ka. Now ka ka, depending on the intonation that goes with it, it can mean a couple of things. It can mean I want something to eat, cracker, I'm hungry. It could also mean Coke, which in the South we call all sodas Coke, and so we're from the South and that's what he learned, so caca means give me a Coke. But it can also mean for him convoy, which I don't know if any of you are old enough to remember the old convoy movie with Chris Christopherson. That's his favorite movie. And so the same vocalization means three things for him. You can also have verbal communication, which is the way we all communicate. You can have gesture communication. So that includes your sign language, your both informal and formal signs. You can have picture communication, which if you've ever seen PECs, that is one form of picture communication. We also have systems that are voice output communication aids, or you might also hear speech-generated device. So a VOCA or an SGD, and that is using the iPad to talk, but it might also be using something like the Dynavox. And then lastly, for individuals who have motor impairments, severe motor impairments, they may also be able to use a scanning system where they use a head touch or a light pointer to activate a system that then systematically scans through vocabulary by rows and by columns, until the learner gets to the thing that they're trying to say. Now, let's talk about the pros and the cons of each one of those modes. When you're using vocalizations, the receiver, so the person who's listening, needs to know what the learner's saying. So if you come and you meet my brother and you hear him say ka-ka-ka, you have no idea what he's talking about. You might think he's talking about caca something nasty. You might think he's saying caca I want a cracker, but instead he's actually saying caca I want Coke. And so the receiver has to understand what that means. You are also very limited in what you can say if you can only use vocalizations. So my brother can say caca, he can say mama, he can say dada, he can say bye-bye, and he can say uh-oh. Now, he has, of course, multiple meanings of the use of uh-oh. There's uh-oh, I see a plane, and then there's uh-oh, I did something I wasn't supposed to do. But, again, very, very limited communication skills when he just relies on vocalizations. The good thing about his vocalizations, they're always with him. They're attached to his body, and he always has them. But he also has to remember and rely on memory to use them. And so if a student has trouble with recall or remembering, vocalizations might not be the best thing. Now, verbal communication, we all think is the bomb. It's what we use. It works very well. But the receiver, as long as it's in the same language, the receiver will understand what you're saying. Now, my brother and I have traveled to many countries, and you know, you might not always understand what people are saying. In fact, you know, one day we were in a shop in Italy, and we were leaving the shop, and the woman said, "Ciao," and my brother turned around and signed cheese back to her because he thought she said cheese. If you're all speaking the same language, right, then it's fairly easy to communicate, and it's always with you. It does rely on that memory system again, but unfortunately for many of the people that we work with or that we care for, verbal communication either doesn't develop or is very limited. So then we go on to gestures. Gestures are the formal and informal system. So informal systems include the waves that we use when we pass people on the street. It can also include pointing or nodding your head or covering your hand over your mouth. But it can also include formal systems. And so the formal systems are American Sign Language, Signing Exact English, British Sign Language. I think there's also a Spanish Sign Language. So there are multiple formal sign systems, and those actually do produce language and have language-based rules. Again, the receiver must understand what you're saying. And so my brother actually has almost 200 signs. He's really getting up there in all the different things that he can say. The problem is he has some motor skills problems, and he doesn't always sign exactly the way a person who does not have motor skill issues. And so the receiver doesn't always understand what he's trying to say. You can have unlimited communication options if you're fluent in using your hands. But unfortunately, many children with autism also have fine motor delays. And so that becomes a difficulty in teaching them how to make all of those different signs. A pro about gestures is they're always with you. So they're always attached to your body, and you can take them wherever you go. You don't have to worry about the internet being down or the power being off. But the learner does have to remember all of those signs that you're teaching them. And some signs are very close in meaning. My brother, you know, loves hamburgers. And to make the hamburger sign, you take your right hand and place it over the palm of your left hand and squeeze your fingers around each other. And you do that back and forth, as if you're pressing a hamburger patty. A pancake, on the other hand, is your hands, your palms are open and flat, and you take your palm and you flip it front to back, like you're flipping a pancake. Now, that might be easy for you and I to remember, but for a learner who has trouble remembering or trouble with their motor skills, it may become very difficult for them to distinguish between a hamburger and a pancake. Then we have symbolic communication. So symbolic communication includes the use of pictures, whether they're formal systems or informal systems. So you can actually pull up the internet and find a picture on the internet and point to it to tell someone what you're looking for. But they also have formal systems like PECs where the pictures are set and you can scan through them very quickly to find what you need. There are even more complicated formal systems, such as bliss symbols, where the pictures are made to represent phrases or words. And again, you have to be able to understand all of those images and what those images mean. For the most part, as long as the system is simple, the receiver has no trouble understanding what the user is requesting. But using pictures can be a very slow process. And for some people, they either want to communicate faster, and for some receivers, they don't have patience to stop and listen. Now, symbols can go one step further and come in different shapes and forms. So you can actually, for people who can't, who have visual issues and can't make out the pictures, and some children with autism do have vision problems, and so they can't make out two-dimensional pictures. You can also use an object, or what we call three-dimensional. So if you're requesting a Coke, you might use the entire Coke can, or you might even use the tab off the top of the Coke can to symbolize, "I'm looking for a soda." And then, of course, you can have color pictures, black and white pictures, You can have line drawings, and then you can also use your written text, because the way that we write every day, it is also symbolic communication. Now, the symbols are portable for the most part, but if you have a really big vocabulary, you might not be able to take that with you at all times. Now, that's where something like the iPad might come in, because you could keep your entire picture vocabulary on the device. So now I'm going to transition and talk about VOCAs and SGDs, so voice output communication aids or speech-generated devices. So we have multiple kinds of devices. We can have a low-tech device, and that includes things like a switch, where you literally hit the switch and it turns something off or on. And we have things called Big Macs and jelly beans. Big Macs, I don't know if you've been in the field or been around a while, but you may have come into contact with this button. It comes in bright colors. It's fairly large. It's bigger than a hamburger. And all the user has to do is tap it, and then a pre-recorded message will be played. Jelly beans are smaller, a little bit bigger than a silver dollar, and those can be used exactly like the Big Mac. You can also get other devices that have four buttons or eight buttons. At one point in time, my brother had a fanny pack, and in the fanny pack was a device that had 10 buttons, and they were very small, about the size of your pinky, but the pictures were clear enough for him to understand what he was trying to say. We also have high-tech devices, so things like the Dynavox or the Mini-Merc are amazing systems that are computer-based, and you have unlimited communication options, but you are reliant on that device to be with you and powered and, you know, charged up for volume at all times. And finally, the iPad, which I put somewhere between the low-tech and the high-tech, because you have unlimited programming options on the iPad, but it's very easy to use. My brother has a Mini-Merc that he got long before the iPad became available, and it was so complicated to program that it resulted in lack of use by all of his team. Now, devices can usually go wherever you go, and they're very helpful in other people understanding them. Devices, if they're loud enough, you know, are easily understood by others. But if the batteries go down or if the volume is not loud enough, it does become difficult. And depending on how fast someone can type or use their system, it could be a very slow process. So the important thing to take away is that every single system that we use has strengths and has weaknesses. And there's no one method that's perfect for everybody. And so it's perfectly fine to teach someone to have multiple methods. So my brother uses his sign language. He also uses pictures, and he uses his iPad. So he can do, and he has his vocalization. So he can rely on multiple methods. The most important thing is that whatever method you pick, that it's a method that the student likes, and it's a method that the parents and the teachers like. Everybody has to be able to want to learn how to use it and be able to use it. There is a thing called total communication, and that is when you allow the learner to use all kinds of options for communicating. Okay, so now I'm going to move forward and talk a little bit about special education law. So this law applies to any person with an identified disability up until their age 22. Now, there are some rules about how you qualify. We don't have time to go into those rules, but if your child has an IEP, then he or she is eligible for special education law services. And so the name of the law is called the Individuals with Disabilities Education Improvement Act, or IDEA. And the act has been revised multiple times over the years, with the most recent one passing in 2004. It is time to update the law, and we expect to see some revisions in the next couple of years. Now, the law covers all sorts of things, including evaluation and getting an IEP and having an FBA and getting a BIP and making sure that the services are free, making sure the students are educated in a least restrictive environment, and many, many parent rights. There's also a procedural process that's supposed to happen. So if your child already has an IEP, then you're already quite familiar with the process. So the kid gets referred, there's an evaluation, the team determines all the areas of need during that evaluation and referral process. Now, this is one place where assistive technology falls. Now, you hear that I'm changing terms. I've moved from AAC over to assistive technology. Well, assistive technology includes many things, and it especially includes AAC. But it also includes other things that students have the right to beyond communication. So under special ed law, it's called assistive technology. Now, in that assessment process, if you think the student needs assistive technology or AAC, then it should be assessed by the school team. Now, you're probably sitting at home thinking, oh, my goodness, my child's been assessed, and we didn't do an AP assessment. You're not stuck. All you have to do is call your team and say, I went to this webinar, and I learned my child may need augmentative communication support. So I'm requesting an AT evaluation, and they have to do it. They have to determine if your child does need that service. After the assessment, then the IEP is written. And so in the IEP, your student or your child or your loved one would need to have goals related to using the device and or using the mode of communication effectively. After you write the IEP, then you actually do this thing called service allocation, where the team decides what services are needed to implement the IEP. And that's another time that assistive technology is talked about. And we'll talk about all that comes with the service in a minute. And then, of course, the student is placed and the IEP is implemented and the progress is reviewed. There are a couple other things under the law that are really important. One relates to native language. So when a student is being assessed, they are supposed to be assessed in their native language. So if your child already uses sign language, they're supposed to be tested using sign language. If they already use PECS, they're supposed to be tested using PECS. In that IEP process, which we just talked about, the entire team is going to consider all the good things about your child, all the things that your child needs, as well as the goals and things that you want your child to work on. And, of course, those goals are going to be measurable. Most of the time, the goals include academic skills, language skills, adaptive skills, motor skills, social-emotional skills, and behavioral skills. So within that, under language, that's where your student's augmented communication goals would fall. Your student needs to be able to express himself and understand what others are saying to him. And specifically, at every IEP meeting, the team is supposed to consider the communication needs of the child. So if the child has communication difficulties, the team is supposed to specially say, what are those needs, what can we do to help, and they are supposed to specifically consider whether assistive technology services are needed. So if you don't remember doing that in your child's IEP, then you certainly want to go back, have another IEP meeting, and have them consider your child's communication needs. Every IEP that I've ever seen, and I've looked at IEPs for, 25-plus years in 10 different states, every IEP has a little box that states whether assistive technology devices and services are needed. And so check your child's IEP. That box may be checked, no. And so, again, you can go in and ask for that evaluation. So I'm going to present a case study now of a little boy named Daniel. It's not his real name. He's 8 years old. He has autism. He's nonverbal. He also engages in lots of problem behavior. He hits his mother. He hits his teachers. And he also hits himself. The IEP team met, and they said, Daniel does not need assistive technology because they're going to continue working on his verbal language. So when you look at this from all aspects, what you see is Daniel is nonverbal. He has autism. So he's 8 years old. He's still not speaking. Daniel needs to be able to speak. We know from all the research on challenging behavior that most of the time challenging behavior happens because of a communication difficulty. And while the team is going to continue working on verbal language, it is imperative that they give Daniel a voice. And so the team must assess Daniel, and they must determine what AAC option is best for him. Now, IDEA, the law, also says that a device is included. So if the assessment team assesses the need, and the need is there for augmentative communication, then that means a device would also be included. It could be a low-tech device. It could be a high-tech device. It could also be PECS. So they define device as anything, any piece of equipment or system that's needed, whether it's off the shelf or on the shelf or made from scratch. When you're writing the IEP and you're deciding what service needs to go with it, it includes the assistive technology service. And so that service is evaluating, purchasing, leasing, somehow getting the device, but it also includes picking which device is appropriate, setting up the device so that it's usable for the student, customizing it so that the student can use it in all environments, making sure that it stays up to date. It also includes coordinating the use of the device with other teachers, other therapies, and other settings. And then training anybody that needs the training, including training the parents and training the teachers or training the paraprofessionals. So that is all that's available under the IEP. So when you're writing your child's IEP, you want to make sure if training is needed, that's a service that needs to go on the IEP. So now I'm going to present to you another case study. The little girl's name is Nider. She's 7 years old. She has Down syndrome and she has Down syndrome and autism, and she's nonverbal. At the IEP meeting, the team said, we cannot assess Nider because our district is so small and we have too few resources. We're so sorry. So the facts here are that the district cannot say they don't have money to test Nider. The law says if Nider has a need, then the team must come up with the resources to do it. And so that is not the parent's fault. But the school does need to come up with the funding to provide Nider the services that are required. Another topic that comes up is can the device go home if the school pays for it? And the law is very clear. This is an individual decision that's made at each IEP meeting. And so in this IEP meeting, the team will decide, does the child need the device at home? Is the device going to be safe? Because devices can be very expensive. And so if the school is worried about the device being lost or stolen or broken, that is something they can consider. But it's a team decision, not a decision that's made without the parents. So I have two case studies here. One is a little girl, Susie, who's 12. She has cerebral palsy and autism. She uses her GoTalk to communicate. But the teacher says that GoTalk cannot go home with Susie because it is too expensive. Then we have Jonna, who's 10. She also has autism. She uses the iPad, with a software called TouchChat. The principal says it's district policy that the iPad has to stay at school. The principal even went on to say, we will buy the software so she can put it on her home iPad. So let's start with Susie. So here's Susie. The district says that device is too expensive, but Susie's mom says, I don't understand what Susie's trying to communicate at home. She gets mad, and then she hits me. Susie needs to have a way to communicate at home, and it's the district's responsibility to help make sure that that communication generalizes from school to home. Now, for Jonna, I raised a question in Jonna's meeting. I said, look, so here's Jonna. She has her device at school, and then she has her device at home. But there's this big gap of time when she's on the bus with nothing. She's completely nonverbal except for saying, yes. And so I said, what if Jonna has to go to the bathroom? What if Jonna's feeling sick? She can't tell anyone. And so her iPad needs to be able to go with her back and forth so that she always has her voice. Now, in addition to augmentative and communication, there are other things that are covered under the law. And so if you have the slides, that's on page 38. I'm not going to go over those things because they don't relate to the topic today. But it is important for you to know that if your student or child needs any of these things, those would also be considered in the assessment. And then just a little reminder that assistive technology includes any picture schedules, social stories, or token boards that your student uses to be successful. And then before we move on to the research on augmentative communication, I think it's very important for you to know that we covered federal law. So every state has their own special education law that supports the federal law. So make sure that you look at your own state law and find out if there are any extra things that are included. Like for Texas, for example, they have the autism supplement, and it has 14 things that are supposed to be considered in every IEP meeting. Okay, so moving on to the research. I want to say first that PECS is an evidence-based intervention for individuals with autism. When you get the handouts, if you don't have them in front of you, I've provided a link to you that you can go to and read about the research on PECS. There's also research articles available at a similar website, so you can click on that. There's a great group that used IDEA money to look at the research on kids with autism, and that group is at the Frank Porter Graham Institute at the University of North Carolina. They also summarized the research on VOCAs, and they demonstrated that the use of VOCAs is also evidence-based. And so, again, there's a link for you to follow so that you can take it to your school. And you might be saying, well, why does it matter if it's evidence-based? Because the law requires teachers and schools to use evidence-based practices. And so this way you can say, look, this is evidence-based. We should at least try it with my student. Now, some parents worry that if they start using augmentative communication, that it would prevent their child from talking. And we have so much other research to the contrary. So there's also two research studies that I put here where they went back and reviewed all of the studies to show that children did go on to talk. If you look at the PECS literature, as many as 80% of students on PECS go on to learn how to speak. In the study, I did a study on VOCAs with kids who were nonverbal. And our study showed that those children, as a result of the intervention, began trying to vocalize what they were requesting with their SGDs. So it is very important to know, just because you start augmentative communication does not mean it will stop verbal communication. And in many cases, it will actually make those opportunities better. And so I have a little quote here that I want to give to everyone. Every person should have the opportunity to communicate basic needs and wants without having to have challenging behavior. So I'm going to present to you a case study for a boy that I will call Alex. He's 28 years old. He has an intellectual disability, and he's nonverbal. He's blind in one eye from hitting himself in the head. He has cataracts in the other eye. He graduated from high school after 18 years of special education services, but no one in those 18 years taught him how to communicate. He doesn't have vocal skills. He doesn't have verbal skills. He doesn't have gesture skills, and he doesn't have picture skills. He never was taught how to use a device. And so here's this man who got all of the special education services, and no one ever taught him to do the most important thing, which is communicate. So I say that teachers and speech pathologists and behavior analysts all have the duty to teach clients how to use a voice or how to have a voice. With that, I'm going to say one more thing about my brother. So he's 35. He lives in a group home. He has two roommates. He vocalizes. He has pictures that he can use. He also uses his iPad, and he signs. His preference for communication is sign language. But the problem is the staff in the group home don't know what he's saying. And so, as you know, with group homes, there's often staff turnover. So it seems like once a week he's meeting someone new. Those people do not know what he's saying. So when he says that he has to go to the bathroom, they don't know it. And so that puts him at risk for more problem behavior. So how do you know what your student or your loved one needs? And so you can only make that decision from an assessment. So if you're following along on the slide, we're on slide 50. So as we talked about with special education law, regardless of who's going to pay for the assessment, you must start with an assessment, okay? So as Kristen said, your insurance plan may or may not cover this if your school system won't. And we'll talk about some other funding options at the end. But what's important, no matter what you do, you have to start with an assessment. And so over the process of the assessment, you want to look at what the skills that the person has. You want to look at their preferences. You also want to look at the environment to see how it's going to support whatever device you pick. And it's so important to consider people's preferences, including the family and the community. The assessment is very comprehensive. You have to look at cognitive skills, language skills, seating issues, motor skills, vision skills, and any other environmental issues. I have put in a great feature matching chart. It's a link to a document that someone else has made, and they take all of the things that you're supposed to consider, and they put all of the possible augmentative communication strategies in one column and all of the options in the other, and they let you see which match might be good for your loved one. And I'm sure you won't be surprised that researchers have already started looking at, do kids prefer the iPad over PECS? Do kids prefer PECS over sign? Do kids prefer iPad over sign? And I'm sure you're not going to be surprised that there's no clear answer. Everybody has their own preference. Just like you like hamburgers, I like veggie burgers. You like french fries, I like baked potatoes. Everybody has their own preferences, and so the assessment has to be driven by an individualized decision-making process. Once you complete the assessment and decide what intervention is going to be used or what device is going to be used, then you actually have to do intervention to teach it. So what I say is the students don't learn by osmosis. You can't just put the device in front of them and expect them to know how to use it. You do have to teach it. And so when we're teaching students how to use devices, we use good old-fashioned ABA, applied behavior analysis, and that includes prompting, reinforcing, stating the prompt, and making sure that the reinforcement then is thinned out so that the device and the communication itself becomes the reinforcers. Then, after you teach the learner to use it, you also have to train everybody else to respond to it. So you're going to have to train the teachers. You're going to have to train the parents. You're going to have to train the peers, because we want the peers to respond when the child is learning to talk. I went into a preschool class for one of my students who was using her iPad to communicate. And the other preschoolers called her a baby and said, no, she's a baby. She doesn't know how to talk. And I said, well, she does know how to talk. She uses an iPad. Let me show you how difficult it is to learn how to talk on this thing, and then you'll see she's not a baby. And so we went around the classroom, and every student got to put in what they wanted to say on the iPad. And by the end of the lesson, they all said, oh, she's not a baby. She has to be really smart to know how to do this. And it helped them be more welcoming for her. I've included, for those of you using the slides, I've included a few things on text because it is so effective. You can also use the iPad following the PECS model because, again, it is an evidence-based approach. So one of the things we first do is teach the exchange, so hitting the button or giving a picture saying that I want something. And then we move the communication device or the picture further away so that the learner has to go get it and take it to the adult. Then we teach them how to discriminate between two different pictures or three different or four different once they get really good. And then we move on to sentences. I want apples or I want milk. And then from there we move on to I see or I have. When you're using the iPad, there are many different communication apps. And on slide 62, they're listed. There are quite a few more listed on my blog as well. The options are unlimited, and that's why you need to have an assessment to figure out which one is best for the student. But let me just give you a few examples about how we use the iPad for different kinds of communication. So when we have young children who don't know how to request a break or they don't know how to request food, we use the iPad to teach them that. So they find a picture, they hit the picture, and then they get the thing that they're asking for. So that's what we call in behavior analysis, we call it manding or requesting. We also can teach commenting skills. And so for my brother, we use Proloquo, and we have a folder set up called his schedule. And in his schedule, we put, you know, what's coming up, and then after it happens, we change it to past tense. So he can say, I'm going to see my sister tomorrow. And then after he comes to see me, he goes back, and now he can hit the button, and it says, I went to my sister's house on Friday. My best story ever with him was we had gone to the doctor, and we took his iPad with us. And while I was paying for parking, he was sitting on the bench socializing with the people who were in line to pay for parking. And all of a sudden, I hear his device go off. I'm going to Five Guys. And I heard someone in the line say, I love Five Guys. And then I heard him say, I'm going to have a hamburger with bacon and no bun. And I heard the person in line say, ooh, I love their hamburgers. And then my brother said, I am going to have French fries. And the person in line said, Five Guys has the best French fries. And this is a complete stranger. And then the last communication exchange, my brother said, I'm going to have a soda. And the person in line said, I don't drink soda, but I bet you're going to enjoy yours. So here's my brother, who is nonverbal, having a conversation with a stranger using his iPad. And then, of course, you can use the iPad to teach reading and to teach writing. So it's time for me to wrap up and let you guys do your evaluation and have questions. But I just want to end with, once you get the device, you want to think about how am I going to go about teaching and what do I go about teaching. And the most important thing to teach is independence. So teaching your loved one or your student how to make requests for things they want, and to reject things that they don't want. Teach them to answer yes and no so that when someone says, do you want this, they can say no, or do you want that, they can say yes. And then once they are getting skilled at those things, then you can move on to what question. So what is your name, and what do you want for dinner, and where do you want to play outside? And then I've included a pretty little graphic to show that we start very general, and as the skills get better, we get more specific. So the first thing I'm going to teach someone to do is say eat. And so they're going to eat. They're going to say eat, and I'm going to feed them. They're going to say eat, and I'm going to feed them. And so then once they get really good at eat, then I'm going to play stupid. And I'm going to say, oh, you want to eat? Do you want fruit or do you want snacks? And so once they get really good at picking between a fruit and a snack, then I move on. Now they're asking for fruit. They skip eat, and they go straight to fruit, and then I play dumb again. Oh, you want fruit? I'm sorry, do you want an apple or do you want a banana? So that eventually they can start picking out exactly what they want without having to be general. And I've included some other vocabulary things that you might include, such as greetings and small talk about the weather and putting in things that you may have done over the weekend. And so with that, I know I am pushing my time, but there is also a page of resources, which reminds me the funding piece that we didn't talk about. So we talked about school funding. Their insurance funding is a possibility based depending on your child's plan. And then there's also grants available through multiple providers. So look at your state. You should have a state Department of Disability Services or Developmental Services. You should also have a state Assistive Technology Resource Center. And that resource center may be able to connect you with funding that's available if your student's over 22. And then also check out agencies like Autism Speaks and the Autism Society of America, because they also offer grants for individuals who are learning how to communicate. With that, I'm going to turn it back over to Kristen so that we can run through the survey questions.
Alan, you can go ahead with the survey questions.
Thank you, ma'am. To help us evaluate and improve our program, please complete the following survey. If you're a Cigna employee, we ask that you please refrain from participating in the survey. After the last question, there'll be an opportunity for you to ask questions of your own. And after I finish reading each question and the possible responses, please answer by pressing the star key followed by the number that corresponds to your choice. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your center to reach our equipment. Your individual responses will be kept confidential. Please tell us the degree to which you agree or disagree with the following statements. This session has provided me with education on different modes of communication. Press star 1 if you strongly agree, star 2 if you agree, star 3 if you disagree, and star 4 if you strongly disagree. Once again, this session provided me with education on different modes of communication. That's star 1 if you strongly agree, star 2 if you agree, star 3 if you disagree, and star 4 if you strongly disagree. And we'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone the chance to respond. This session informed me on various ways to support communication with augmentative and alternative devices. I strongly agree, press star 1, star 2 if you agree, star 3 if you disagree, and star 4 if you strongly disagree. Again, this session informed me on various ways to support communication with augmentative and alternative devices. Star 1 if you strongly agree, star 2 if you agree, star 3 if you disagree, and star 4 if you strongly disagree. Once again, we'll pause for just a moment. Overall, this session met my expectations. Please select one of the following responses. Star 1, strongly agree. Star 2, agree. Star 3, disagree. And star 4, strongly disagree. Overall, this session met my expectations. Once again, that's star 1 if you strongly agree. Star 2, if you agree. Star 3 if you disagree, and star 4 if you strongly disagree. I would recommend this program to others. Press star 1 if you agree, or star 2 if you do not agree. Once again, I would recommend this program to others. Star 1 if you do agree, and star 2 if you do not agree. And our last question, please select the response that best describes your role in the life of an individual with autism. Press star 1 if you are the parent of a child with autism. Star 2 if you're a family member of a child with autism, or star 3 if it's something else. Once again, this is your best role, best describes your role in the life of an individual with autism. Star 1 if you are the parent of a child with autism, star 2 if you are a family member of a child with autism, or star 3 for other. Thank you for your feedback and for participating in our program. If you'd like to make any additional comments to help us improve our program, or if you have any questions on today's topic, you can press star 1 at this time to have your line opened into the conference. Once again, that is star 1 if you'd like to ask a question, and please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. And we'll pause for just another moment. Okay, once again, that is star 1 if you'd like to ask a question. We'll go to our first caller. Please go ahead. Your line is opened.
Yes, I have a quick question. I have a 7-year-old who is he's pretty verbal. I mean, he's high functioning, and he's pretty verbal, but he does have his gibberish at the same time. So I'm worried if I try to get him one of those devices, because I want to implement text at home that he uses at school, but if I get him one of those audio devices, like an iPad or something like that, would that hinder him and make him revert all the language that he's already learned how to use?
Well, actually, the research says that it will not hinder him, that it will most likely help him. And so, and again, you want to try out different devices. A lot of my clients are having good luck with ProLoquo and TouchChat because you can, they both have typing functions so that you can actually type out, I don't know if he can spell. And so then when they have the words, even in ProLoquo, it has the words and the pictures at the same time. And so then, just like text, he can see it, and then he can put his finger on each word and help him repeat it back. But sometimes just hearing it come out of the computer really makes it more salient for them.
Okay, yeah, I'm definitely looking for something, because he's getting to the point where he's older, and so he's getting frustrated, and he's taking it out with kicking and screaming and yelling, and I feel like if I got him something that could help him even more express himself, you know?
Yep, and it's like the young man that I talked about in the talk. You know, here he is, he's 14 years old, and he knows when he wants regular salted chips versus barbecue chips. And so, you know, it really matters. And so if we can give kids the voice, then we need to be able to do that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And one more time, that's star 1. If you'd like to ask a question, we'll pause for just one more moment. It looks like we have no questions at this time. So, Ms. Martin, I'll turn it back over to you for any additional or closing remarks.
Thank you so much for attending, and thank you, Dr. Olive, for providing such wonderful insights. Again, if you have questions about therapies discussed today, please contact the autism team by calling the number on the back of your insurance card. Please be sure to mark your calendars to join our next Autism Awareness Seminar on June 12th at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific Time, when we will be discussing increasing a child's ability to remain with an adult in the community and decreasing elopement. Thank you, and have a great day.
That does conclude today's call. We thank everyone again for their participation.